This is Art and Soul Radio. Hello and welcome to Art and Soul Radio. I'm your host, Leslie Riley of Artist Success. It is Monday, February 27, 2012, and I'm coming to you from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. My guest today is Katie Kendrick, artist, instructor, and author of the fabulous new book, Layered Impressions, A Poetic Approach to Mixed Media Painting. A big hello to all Art and Soul Radio fans, and an even bigger welcome to those of you joining us for the first time. Thank you so much for listening and spreading the word about the in-depth artist interviews here at Art and Soul Radio, where you will find the answer to the eternal question, where does art come from? Art and Soul Radio is brought to you by Art and Soul, the National Art Retreat. For more information on workshops and locations, please visit the website at artandsoulretreat.com. And a reminder, you can always listen to any show on the Blog Talk Radio show website, but even better, subscribe to the iTunes Art and Soul Radio podcasts and download them to your iPod, iPhone, or iPad. It is inspiration on the go. So let's get this show started. Katie Kendrick lives along the bank of the Tahuya River in western Washington State, surrounded by the Tahuya State Forest. The peaceful beauty of the nature that surrounds her is a constant source of inspiration and nourishment for her creative spirit. She finds art making to be one of the most powerful ways to connect with her innermost essence, while at the same time discovering her authentic voice. Katie enjoys the experimental and intuitive layers of creating, where she can explore inner and outer worlds simultaneously. She has a passion for sharing her love of creating with others and teaches mixed media workshops across the U.S. While her work has been featured in many books and magazines, we can now finally get our hands on Katie's first book, Layered Impressions, A Poetic Approach to Mixed Media Painting. I'll be talking about her book and so much more. So it's time I bring Katie onto the show. Hello, Katie, and welcome to Art and Soul Radio.
Hi, Leslie. Good to talk to you.
Yes, this will be fun. I haven't seen or talked to you for so long, so I really like the fact that we're connecting, even if we're on the phone doing it and we're on opposite sides of the country, but better than nothing, right?
Right. That's true. Next best thing.
Yes, for sure. And I love the fact that we're both near a river, too. I thought that was pretty cool when I was, researching where you live and all, and I know that you live very, very close to a river, and I'm probably about a mile from my river, the Potomac River, but you're right on the Tahuya River, aren't you?
We are, yes, and as the river continues to move and change over the years, we seem to be a little closer all the time. Yeah, it's exciting living on a river, but luckily during the summer it's pretty small. So
that's
it's
good. Just I remember one time reading on your blog how it was rising and getting closer and closer. So you've had some pretty scary rainy periods, haven't you?
We have, yeah. I mean, it's always exciting living here on the river, and, exciting sometimes isn't really thrilling, but, we've had salmon actually on our driveway after a big flood.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, it's luckily this year, though, we haven't had a big flood, and so every month, this is usually the worst month for flooding, this month in December, so we hope, cross fingers, we're over the worst.
Yeah, good, okay. Because I know that the river and the forest you live near and all of nature are a really important influence on your art. But then I was thinking, I thought, well, everything I see that you do seems to be figurative, and you have faces and people in, I want to say all of your work, but I haven't seen all of your work, of course. So would you tell us how the people and the faces you paint relate to the inspiration that you find in nature?
As much as I can, this is how it kind of works for me in my art. And I'll just step in kind of at the very end of what I would probably say and just say it now, that my art is really going through a huge change. And so I'm not painting people. I'm doing some things that I haven't ever done before. And but that would also apply to what I'm going to say next, which is nature is just a really important, it's important as far as getting me in touch with who I am and reminding me of my connectedness with everything. And that aspect allows me to come to painting with an amount of presence so that I can just allow whatever comes to unfold. And most of it, I have no idea where it comes from. You know, mm-hmm. The people, they're just crazy, some of them. And I don't know who, you know, I kind of get to know who they are as I paint them. But, you know, I really don't know. I don't know. And I've gotten to the point where I don't try and figure it out because I'm not a representational painter. I'm not trying to paint what I see. But what I see, when I can really be present in myself and centered, what I see has a strong influence on what I paint, even if I can't mm-hmm. put my finger on it.
Okay, yeah, and you're right. I did notice on your blog that you're taking, or maybe Facebook, I don't know. Who knows where I see these things, but you're doing some abstract painting now. And probably, you know, the fact that the book takes a good year from, or more, from let's do a book to it's now in your hands, I can understand that you would have moved on from what we are seeing in the book.
It's true. And as an artist, you can really understand that. So how we just explore something so much. And although we love it, and I still love all the people, there's a part of me that just wants to see other, you know, stick my head out over the fence and see what else is over there and kind of dip my toe into that for a while. And
yeah.
I, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at. And it's scary, and it's really been, it's been a big change for me. And I guess that's just an issue that as artists that we, you know, we face when we make a big switch, it's you know, we're in really different terrain, and it is kind of scary.
Yeah, it is. It's. Do you find it, because I my answer is yes to my question, but do you find it that you want to sometimes just fall back on what comes easily and what's familiar, or are you just through with it and you want to forge ahead?
I guess the answer is it's easy to fall back on because my hand is so used to doing it. And so when I come to whatever it is, the canvas or the journal or whatever, and I'm feeling like I don't want to open to that extent and I just want to be safe, then I'll just I'll find my hand wanting to do another face, you know, the way I, and that's okay. I mean, I tell myself that's fine because we make little steps at a time sometimes.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, it's nice to hear that you're going through the same thing that unfortunately I've been going through for a couple of years now. So, but I think you have more time to create and to get into that zone than I do. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of progress from you over the next couple of years for sure.
Well, I hope so. I know sometimes having other things to do is actually helpful than being
True.
Here. You know, it's like, but on the other hand, you know, yes, I do have more time, and you're absolutely right. And I just have to be really clear when I wake up in the morning that my prayer, my intention is to be brave, to, you know, to play. And to, you know, not take it all so seriously. And as artists, we get so much affirmation from what we do, and I think that's really important. It feeds us somehow. But yet, when we do something new, that's not there. You know, we don't have that body of work to to support that. So,
yeah, and I think what we're talking about now is really good for people that haven't been at it as long to listen to, because so many people want to go sit down, especially when your time is limited, but you just want to sit down and then have something to show for it in 2 hours or a day or something. And if you are really making headway and following your soul, it doesn't happen in that kind of time constraint at all.
No, it doesn't. It's very much like, at least my experience of this is just, I can just decide that I'm going to make a step and I'm going to be as present as I can in the process and mm-hmm. open as I can. And everything else just has to fall by the wayside. And that's why it's so difficult for me to work on a deadline because it's like I can pump out work just like, you know, any other artist, you know, that's been doing it a while. I think we all know how to really pull it out when we have to, but
right.
just be able to really sit, you know, sit with it and just do it and explore is a whole different thing. And that's why beginners have this huge advantage because they don't have all this past that they're carting with them, you know, all their failures and all their successes and all these voices saying, but will you ever do another one this good? Everything's just brand new.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, like after I wrote my first book, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I felt like, okay, I've said everything I have to say, and I'll never be able to write another book. What are your thoughts on that?
Exactly. I felt like every drop of anything I had to say was totally, you know, squeezed out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I feel like I'm kind of an empty container now, and I'm ready to be filled up with something else, whatever that is.
Yeah, that's a really exciting place to be. So let's step back in time a little bit and find out how you got from there to here. You grew up in the prairies of South Dakota, which blows my mind just because I've never been there. I have this vision of this kind of open, desolate area. I don't know.
Gotcha. But, desolate was going through my mind when you talked. Desolate.
And then the other thing that I read, and I didn't know this about you, but you took off right after high school and traveled around the Northwest and maybe even further. And I'm basically a city girl, and I hate to admit this, but it's true. I did not travel anywhere alone until I was 41 years old. So I want to know, did you travel alone? And basically, how did you find the courage to just take off like that at such a young age?
Well, I left home actually when I was 15. I moved in with my sister, and I became an emancipated minor.
Okay.
So I had a pretty, you know, a childhood that was quite challenging. And so I acted out a lot. And my sister was like, she was 12 years older. She took me in, and I got to experience, I was into a lot of drugs and bad crowd. Where I grew up, there was the two main industries were the meatpacking plant where my dad worked and the prison.
Oh, wow.
A lot of negative influences there. And I was a very sensitive person and very, I don't know, I had, I just had a lot of needs. And so anyway, when my sister took me in and I finished high school there, it was amazing because I got to go to it was called an experimental high school, and it was off the University of Minnesota campus. And all the instructors were professors. And so I got this amazing year of art. I took sculpture. I took design. I took the Bible as literature. I mean, I took poetry. It was really an amazing experience. And which I really needed at that point because I came from such a desolate place, both inside me and in my town, in my family. So when I graduated early, I graduated with straight A's, which was amazing because I had practically been failing school. I told everybody I was going on a visit to California, but I knew I was going to move there. And so I just took all my graduation money and took a plane to LA. And I knew somebody there, and I had a lot of adventures. And from there, I traveled a lot, sometimes alone, sometimes I hitchhiked. Usually I met somebody, though. Sometimes I went with a friend. I was a very, I wanted experiences. So a lot of my traveling was I went through places. So hot springs. We went to hot springs, different hot springs all over the western United States. I went to barter fairs and hippie-type gatherings where people made things and grew things. And it was an extremely important part of my education as an artist, even though I didn't really start doing art seriously until my children were older.
Right.
I was pretty fearless.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at you, talking to you now, I never would have guessed that. But
no, you wouldn't have.
No. Not that you're hiding it or anything, but it's just not the person, you know, it just does not show. Let's put it that way. And it's funny because we both kind of arrived at the same place as artists and grandmothers and our gray hair and my white hair and all those things that come with age. But speaking of age, what do you enjoy most about getting older?
I would say the sense of freedom that I have. I don't feel like I have to please people like I used to. There's still that element there, but it's not driving me like it did for so many years. I just feel like a woman who can have a mind of her own, and I love that part. I feel a little feisty.
Yay!
I'm still
waiting for that, though. I got too many people still relying on me that I have to put their needs, not always first, but, you know, it's always present there. So I'm really looking forward to that part. I've got all the other, signs or whatever of the aging process, but I don't have that freedom yet. So it's good to hear that it's out there somewhere waiting for me.
Well, it is, and also it is very situational. And, you know, I'm blessed right now to have a bless and a curse. My kids and my grandkids are away. They don't live near me right now. And so I have, you know, and I didn't want them to move, but one of them's military, and they'll be back. But it was, you know, I have this big expanse of time that would probably be full of grandchildren if I, you know, had them here.
Yeah, yeah. It's all, like, I always, especially when I do these interviews, I remember that song, "To Everything There Is a Season." So this is your season of alone, and who knows what the future brings. So let's talk about your book.
Okay.
The subtitle is "A Poetic Approach to Mixed Media Painting." So, Katie, what do you mean by a poetic approach?
I would describe it as poetry has to do with the senses, and pretty much it has to do with the senses and embodying the experience, whatever it is. And the painting that I'm talking about is when you come to it embodying the experience. So when your brush moves across the paper or the canvas, you're experiencing the brush moving. You're experiencing the paint moving. You're experiencing the colors. And whatever that conversation is that you're having with the medium, that you're having with the materials and your piece, that back and forth, is just like a visual. It's like a visual poetry. It's very different than coming to it as a project. You know, and some of mine are projects, but there's plenty of room for adding that yourself. It's that element of freedom where you get to put in whatever you want and you can be in the flow.
I love that. And I must ask you, having, you know, written a few books, did you get to name your book?
Part like the Layered Impressions was one of the names of my project. It was a layered impression, but I didn't name the title. That was one that kind of got batted back and forth, you know, the, mm-hmm. the impressions, the poetic. No. So the answer is no, I didn't put it out there. You know, I worked, I said yes and no and threw things.
Right.
You know, I was as surprised as anybody when I found out the exact
title. Yeah, but it's really good. And it's such a good and appropriate title that fits so well that I thought maybe you were one of the lucky ones that got to say, here's what I want to call my book. And they said, okay.
I would credit my editor, Tanya, with a lot of this. I felt like she had such a strong read of me as an artist and of
mm-hmm.
the, and so I really felt so much trust for her, and she knew my vision in some ways before I even could articulate it.
Wonderful.
So
most of the Northlight authors that I interview here on the show have Tanya Davenport as their editorial director or editor, whatever, and they're all excellent books. So I do think you're right. She pulls out the best in people, but yet she knows who she's dealing with, and that really does make a difference, I think.
Yeah, she has a real gift. I mean, what she does is, I told her like a million times, because I'm in awe of that gift. It's not one of my gifts. And
uh-huh.
so I think, you know, every part of the process, I just appreciated everyone's gift that contributed to the book. And overall, I just felt very, very happy with it, you know, which is kind of scary because you don't know. It's like you have all this laboring, and then all of a sudden you see the book, and it's like, what's this baby going to look like?
Yeah, that's the truth. I mean, you do have to learn to give up control, and it's, to me, as an artist creating, you know, a book about your art, that's another form of art. So you really want to make sure that it's so you, and that's really a gift to be able to have work with people that make that final product so very you. So
that's right.
Good teamwork. Really good.
I felt blessed.
All right. So in the book, you wrote two wonderful sentences that I wanted to quote here because I just love them. You say, I've learned to expect the unexpected when I make art. And then the other great one is, the present moment is where the juice is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, but for many, beginning is the hardest part. You know, that whole blank canvas or blank page syndrome. So would you kind of share with us a little more in depth about how you begin and where those beginnings do take you, that little process that you go through? I mean, do you have any failures? Let's put it that way.
No, I don't look at, there are things that if I'm going to bring out the judge or the critic, you know, or if I'm doing this work for selling, you know, I can critique my work and call it a failure in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my process as an artist, no, there are no failures because I'm really grateful for every single stroke of the brush that's taken me to the point I am today. Because if I hadn't done all those things, I wouldn't be the artist I am today. And the only way I can be more of who I am as an artist is to keep making those brush strokes and keep putting those lines down. And the fear part, it's interesting because that part does not go away. And I don't know, I'd be interested to know if there are people. I would think of them as highly evolved if they didn't have that. But I don't. I'm not that evolved. And I, you know, many times I will come to the space and when I see a blank canvas, especially if it's a big blank canvas, there is, if I think about it, I might feel a bit of fear, and what that has to do with is it's a lack of trust in the process. And,
mm-hmm.
and overall, I can bring myself back to the center of trusting the process because I do. I mean, I've done it enough that I know that whatever I'm feeling, whatever's happening, you know, changes. And sometimes some of the most amazing things come from this place of feeling really insecure and fearful, and you shift into something else. And so it's just beginning. It's just starting.
And that's how do you start? What do you do? What's your first? I mean, does it vary? Of course, probably. But what do you do first?
It does vary. It varies all the time. Like this last project, the way I started was I had bought a big, well, it's a 36 by 36 inch canvas that I'm working on. And I bought it at the thrift store because stretch canvases are really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had an acrylic painting on it and a bunch of, like, I don't know what they were trying to do, but it had a bunch of this hand-dyed paper that was, like, peeling off of it. So it was a very interesting surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I removed as much as I could. And then I thought, okay, well, I noticed as I was putting gesso on that this ink was starting to bleed through. So I thought, what could I do to kind of seal the surface? Because I tried gel medium, I tried gesso. So I tore strips of three different colors of muslin that I had into different shapes, and I applied them all over the surface, pretty much covered the surface, although there were areas that didn't get them. And then I gessoed the entire thing, and that's how I started that one. And then I ended up going over it some with molding paste to get
mm-hmm.
some texture. And then I put on a base coat, which a lot of times I like to do, one or two colors, maybe either, you know, the entire piece a certain color or half and half. But that's usually the way I work on larger pieces. If I'm working in my journal, often what I do is I open it up and I start randomly gluing papers down. And I don't know why. It's just because my journal feels really like my comfort, my blankie, my soft spot where I don't have to worry about anything. And so it comforts me to glue down all kinds of paper wherever, and then I'll just start, like, spreading paint around. I might just put
uh-huh.
some paint down and take a credit card and smush it around, or I might start drawing into it. It's just that's my place to play like that. But it varies every time.
Okay. Now, do you work in your journal, like, on a daily basis?
I would wish I worked in my journal on a daily basis. It's more like I feel really good if I work in it like three times a week.
Oh, well, that's still a good number, yeah. And what kind of journal do you use? You're putting, like, gluing and putting gesso down and all this other stuff. So what kind of paper, what brand?
You know, right now, that varies too. I've been working right now on 90-pound paper just because I bought this entire, you know, I bought this huge box from a paper mill thinking it would be thick enough to paint on. And it's good for books, but it's not working for me for painting on, so I've got all this paper. So I'm making
okay.
my own books with that. But a lot of times I'll use 140-pound watercolor paper, and I like the hot press. I like the nice smooth paper. If I, you know, when I get to choose, if I have cold press, I'll use it. But
yeah.
But that's kind
yeah,
of how
I love that.
That.
Yeah. I love that 140-pound weight. That is nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
it really.
I mean, that's just so seductive. I just like to paint it. I love to paint the backgrounds, and that's about as far as I ever get with my journal.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's where I get my pleasure, and so that's the important thing.
It is.
Now, you've mentioned a few of the things that you mix in to create your mixed media paintings and even in your journal. And I know a lot of our listeners just use, if they're painting, they're just going to use a, you know, a brush and their paint on the canvas, or in their journal, they'll just use pencil or some sort of markers or something. So tell us what other things, besides what you've mentioned, or maybe you can repeat those again, what are you adding to your paintings to make them mixed media works of art?
Well, a lot of times I'll start with collage pieces, papers, not my good stuff, just text and, you know, color, and I'll just paste, I'll just glue those around. Then I might go over it with gesso, just some of it. So some of the, you know, I might do a whole wash in gesso, dilute it with some water, and but have it thin enough that I can see the values coming up. So I have areas that are white, you know, light and dark, subtly dark coming up,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of my favorite ways to do it. I might take I like the Caran d'Ache water soluble crayons. That are a lot like watercolors. I like to draw. Sometimes I draw into the wet gesso and then take my finger and kind of rub into it. That's a really nice effect. It gives you, well, if you do it into gesso, it's going to be more pastel. If you do the crayons onto just dry gesso, then you're going to get a more brilliant watercolor mm-hmm. effect if you add a little water. So I like using those. I like using inks sometimes, and I make walnut ink myself from our walnut tree.
And, oh, cool.
Yes, I have a lot of walnut ink, and I also like to tint them with inks, sometimes acrylic inks or any kind of inks I have around that have pigments, colors in them. So I'll have these wonderful brown ink with, you know, little blue or green. And sometimes I like to just put those on my paper, like my watercolor paper, before I've gessoed. Or you could do it after you've gessoed. Let mm-hmm. it dry, kind of play around with that. I do transfers with gel medium. You're the queen of transfers. That's where I've learned everything I know about transfers was... You know, and so I still like to play around with different kinds of transfers. And sometimes I glue fabric in, you know, just like I glue paper down, I glue fabric down. And I've got Japanese kimono fabric because I used to sell it for a number of years, and so I still have a lot of it. And so I'll be gluing that down and painting over it. And, yeah.
Yeah, so basically anything goes.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything. I've found a piece of, I was at the river with my journal sitting on the shore, and I was kind of digging around in the, it was a little grassy spot, and there was a piece of charcoal. Apparently there had been a fire, and the tree
mm-hmm.
the tree had turned black, and so I used that to write in my journal. So
oh, that's
anything.
Kind of cool. Yeah. Okay. Now, for people who are not really familiar with the mixed media approach, is there a point in time after you've added all these things that you say, okay, I'm done, now I'm going to start the main artwork, or does it just all kind of evolve? You know, there's no like, okay, I've finished the background, now I'm starting this.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would think of it, there, you could go a couple different ways. If I've glued a bunch of different papers down, what I like to do for a background is to, okay, the first thing you could do is, like I talked about, go over it with gesso or a paint or something to kind of mute it so that it's not going to be your focal point. And teaching, that's one of the things I see with students a lot. They get really in love with their backgrounds, and they
mm-hmm.
don't want to take anything out. So that's one of the things that you need to to really get a grasp on is removing. You know, don't put anything in there so good that you don't want, you can't remove it. And,
right.
The other way to do it would be to have all of this down, have a lot of dimensional, so you have a lot of shadows, you have a lot of contrast, and then you could start a drawing on top of that. And once you've got your drawing down, then go in with your gesso or your paint and white out around the drawing, or conversely, go into your painting and start coloring it. But both of them can't stand out, so you're going to have to go in there, you know, in either into the background or into the main focal point. And make one of them dominant.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. That's really good information, because I'm sure there's people sitting out there going, well, okay, she's gluing all this stuff on, but when did she start the artwork? So that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, another thing I wanted to share with you, too, and maybe it is because I know you, but your personality really shines through in this book, your gentleness and your quiet presence that belies your wild childhood. But I had to throw that in. But I just wanted to let you know that. And it is so spot on, but I wanted to know, is it hard for you to convey that sense of yourself and your poetic soul in the book format? Because I know, you know, like having to do X number of projects and write X number of words, sometimes it gets more mechanical than it does poetic. So how was it for you?
Oh, that's a great question. And I guess the answer was I did my best with the with what was given, with the time frame allotted me. And the thing that really took me through it was my I had a routine every single day that I would follow before I started working on the book and before I started working on the projects. You know, when this was just a seed and I had signed the contract, but I hadn't even figured out what I was going to be presenting, I had come up with a plan because, A, I'm just a really disorganized ADD person by nature, and so a book is just the total opposite of what I am. So
yeah.
I it gave me a lot of skills, and one of them was organizing and coming to this process with a sense of openness and gratitude every day and trust. And so I would do my meditation and make my connection to source. And then after I made that connection to source, which is different for all of us, I would journal for, you know, however long. I would ask questions. What do I do now? You know, how do I do this? I would write the question, and then I would write the answer from some part of me that I had no idea knew the answer.
And wonderful.
It was really, I can't imagine, I don't think I could have done the book otherwise. You know, I feel like I got everything I needed, and I only got enough for the day. So I got just enough, and then I needed to do the process again. And some days I didn't do the process. I could just manage to skate through, but usually I could only do that for a day. And then when I noticed I started to feel anxiety or, oh, this is just rote, then I would have to go back to that place. And because my intention was to hold an intention for the book, and it wasn't about making money, as you know, and it wasn't about my ego. Yeah, because there's not much of that with the book. It wasn't about me needing attention as an, you know, oh, she's so great, you know, she's done a book. I didn't care about that. What I really wanted was I wanted the book to be meaningful. I just, somebody, you know, let it be meaningful. Don't let it be trite.
Yeah.
So that was my focus.
Well, it certainly came across. It's really, again, it's hard for me to tell because I do know you, but I feel that anyone that picks it up would get this sense of you as being this gentle, poetic soul. So very, very well done.
Well, thanks. And if I had to do, I mean, like I said, I worked within, as you know, having done books, you have this boundaries that you work in, and you can only be so loose. You know, you can only be so free within that form, because there has to be the form. If somebody were to come over and I were going to give them a one-on-one painting about, you know, poetic painting, it wouldn't, you know, it would have a dimension that couldn't be bound by a book.
Exactly.
That's what I mean to say.
Yeah. No, that's what I found so hard too, because, you know, like, for example, my first book, in the directions, they wanted very specific, like, you know, cut a piece of fabric 8 by 10 inches. And that was so counterintuitive to how I work. I just, you know, I never measure anything. I don't have a ruler in the studio, really.
I remember that. Yep.
Really hard to be able to put it all into words so that somebody could duplicate your efforts when deep down you don't want them to duplicate the efforts. That's not the point of the book, really.
Right.
So,
right. That's very true. And I, having taught, like you, I recognize that a lot of students haven't, they're not at the place where they feel free enough to even go out on their own at all. They want to be exactly that way. And so, you know, I told myself it was okay to do that for that reason as a teaching tool.
Right, and it is. It is. Mm-hmm. Because you need that kind of framework, and you need, you know, you can't just dive in without swimming lessons, you know? It's not that kind of a effort for many people. So another thing you did was include a doll in your book, and that's the form of your art that when I first met you, you were making dolls, and I actually have one of your dolls, too. Beautiful doll. And,
my doll article got in there in the Cloth, Paper, Scissors because of you. So I remember
that. Oh, that's
that.
Right. Yeah. It's been such a long time. I don't I forget so many of the things and people and places and all that stuff. So thanks for reminding me about that. I'll have to go dig it out again. But anyway, when did you make the move from doing the soft dolls, the cloth dolls, into the poetic painting that you do now, or used to do?
Yeah, well, you know, I really loved, it's like I did a bunch of those dolls. I don't know how many of those dolls I did, because I was selling them and I was teaching the class, and they all had personalities, and I really enjoyed doing them. And I think I must have done 40 or more, but eventually, maybe towards 32, 33, I don't know the number, it's like the thrill was gone. And I really felt, you know, I had explored this particular area, this particular way, as much as I wanted to. And I went back to flat painting, you know, which I had done before the dolls, but I became more involved. I mean, instead of just heads, some of them had bodies, and I started to work more in my journal. So there was just that little swing, and it happens when we're really in touch with what we're doing. We get that information. Oh, you know, this just doesn't have the juice anymore. Maybe another medium is what I need, and that's what I do. I just switch mediums when I feel that lack of juice, and then I'm all fired up again.
Great. That's great. Now, in the book also, you've sprinkled throughout little, you know, a lot of people put tips in there. You have what you call poetic purposes. So would you tell us what those are and why you chose to include them in the book?
Okay. Well, at the beginning, there's a little writing exercise where you're going to do a poem or some sort of warm-up, and then you're going to do the actual painting, and then the end you're going to give back. And that's the kind of I give you a suggestion about how to expand your art just past yourself to bless somebody else with it, you know, make somebody else happy, either in your family or community or your friends. Just little things that make you feel really good. You know, it always feels really good to do something good for somebody. And also, it people love to be the recipient of art. So I thought that was and Tanya actually thought of this, and you know, because we were thinking of a way to make my book kind of embody all those aspects. Because I don't usually, when I do poems, they're not before my painting. Sometimes they are, but sometimes they're after. One thing inspires the other. The giving back at the end was just a way to kind of broaden it out. And I loved when she thought of that, into the community, because it would just give me one more thing to work with.
Yeah. No, I love it. I think it's a great idea, and it is quite unique. So I just wanted to find out the the thought process behind it. But there we go with Tanya again. So.
Yeah, she had the idea. She wouldn't give me any, she just had the idea. What do you think about giving back? And it was like the minute she said it, it's like, yes, then I could take it, because we all have our own unique spin on how we can give back. But it's just, it's a way to kind of get people kind of steered in that direction after they've done their own personal art.
Right. And it's good, too, because, you know, we do get, when we're in the studio and we're making something, we get so focused on that and into that, and that's all we think about, and it's not good enough, and am I going to be able to do another one? And then just taking it and turning your thoughts outward like that, it probably frees up so much creative energy, too, that it refreshes you for the next time you get back in the studio. So I think it's brilliant.
I think so, too. I think that's absolutely right. Yep.
Okay. So, writing a book is much like birthing a child, as you know. And I know you should never ask a mother if she has a favorite child, but I want to ask you if you have a favorite project in your book.
That is really hard, because I can think, you know, I think of like four at the top of my head that I love so much. I don't think I could pick, you know, it's like
your children. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the children and they're all different. And if you like doing faces, the project in the book, the first project is a really good project for learning to paint using values. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that would be a good one for people. I'm proud of that project. I'm proud of figuring out how to do that and to watch people use it. So I'm proud of that child in that way. I love the cardboard books, and there's several variations of those books, because I love using cardboard and I love adding other materials like fabric, or, you know, turning it into more of a memory book and using, you know, a loved one's clothing or memorabilia.
Definitely.
Yeah, I love that part, because I know how meaningful it was for me to actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the dolls are just fun, you know. They're just playful and whimsical, and the flat painting is always fun. So I guess, like, you know, there's nothing in there I really don't like. I felt good about all my projects. So
okay, spoken like a true mother. Okay.
Yes.
And grandmother too. That's the other.
Right. Yeah.
My daughter, this is totally off topic, but my one of my middle daughters is pregnant with her second child, and she's worried that, you know, she will stop loving the first one as much as she does, or won't love the second one enough. And I just, until you get there, you don't know, but you know, your heart just expands. It's just, you know the answer. I mean, sure, there are a lot of moms listening that know what I'm trying to say, but
So, I have a daughter pregnant with her second as well.
Okay, so how many grandchildren do you have right now?
Well, counting the one she's pregnant with, it'll be six.
Okay. Counting the one mine's pregnant with, it'll be seven. So the contest is on now.
I think mine are done. So
okay.
Probably
I still have three to get married, so I'm going to win. Yeah.
You're going to win.
Oh, boy. Okay. So now we're at the part of the show where I ask my two standard questions of each and every guest. So the first one is, how do you define success as an artist?
That's a good question. Well, I guess it would be staying true. No, there's no guess about it. Okay. It would be remaining true to what is bubbling up inside of me, regardless of, you know, what people like or don't like. That would be, I guess, my success as an artist. The self the self-knowledge, the unveiling of who I am as an artist by just following that thread that just goes and goes and goes. I've got like a finger on it, and as long as I hold my finger on it and I keep following that thread and I don't take off in a direction, for me that means not going off in a commercial direction.
Mm-hmm.
Although I wouldn't mind making a lot of money, that can't be the reason I go off in it. The reason has to be inspired by that purpose. That would be success.
That is success, then. You are successful. So mm-hmm. congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. That's right.
Hey, Katie's a success. Yay. You always have been. Okay, so next question is, where does art come from?
Well, it comes from the mystery, mm-hmm. like everything else. And just like poetry, just like a seed, coming up from the ground, that's where art comes from.
Mm.
And it's different from a kit. It's different than paint by number, which comes from a box. Art comes from, it comes from deep inside, that place that you can't always define, much less understand what it is.
Right.
And I think that's unnecessary to do, I've come to believe, but that's where it comes from.
Yes. And the answers are as varied as the artists I speak to, but that is because it's, in a way, it's not different for everybody, but the way that they are in touch with it and describe it, there's kind of like a thread that goes through all the answers that I hear, but yet it's also unique, just like the artwork that each artist creates. So thank you for sharing your answer.
You're welcome.
And anything else that you would like to share with us before we say goodbye?
Oh, I would just say take that chance. If you're scared, you don't paint, you don't do mixed media, that's a great place to start. And that's a wonderful place to be. And get the encouragement that you need and just do it.
Yeah, that Nike really got it right when they coined that phrase or whatever they've done with it,
mm-hmm.
but just do it is really, when people ask me about it, I say, sorry to sound so trite, but the answer is just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only way you're going to find the answers that you're searching for.
Yep.
So how can people see more of your artwork? Do you have a blog or a website or both?
Actually, I'm working on the website, but I've got them both going into my blog right now. So you can go to katiekendrick.com.
Okay, that's easy enough to remember. Well, then thank you so much for sharing so much with us tonight, Katie. I really had a blast talking to you again, and I do really, really, really hope someday we'll meet up again.
Me too, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, I'll be watching you.
I'll be watching you. Okay.
See where your new abstract paint goes.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening in on my interview with Katie Kendrick tonight. Please come back again on Monday, March 12, 2012, when I'll be talking with artist, art consultant, and community arts organizer Judith Hartsong. Until then, this is Leslie Riley of Artist Success for Art and Soul Radio, reminding you that art is what you make it.